I was undergoing a level of stress that was unfathomable. 9 years into the business, we completely lost product market fit because the shipping costs increased 200%. I had reflected on the fact that when I was going through this, I had no example of what it meant to fail.
I am stressed. Like, I'm like sweating listening to this right now.
It was like crazy. I deserve to give up.
Welcome to The Moment, a new podcast by Canadian Business and Quill Podcasting. I'm one of your hosts, Jason Maganoy, the publisher of Canadian Business, and I'm co-hosting this podcast with Fatima Zaidi, the CEO and founder of Quill Podcasting. Each week, we're welcoming a new entrepreneur to talk about that moment where they were faced with giving up and powering through.
We're talking about the not-so-glamorous side of startup life, the moments we don't always get to hear about, the time when founders had to make a sharp pivot, start over from square one, or ditch an idea entirely. These are the real stories of what it takes to make it as an entrepreneur. Subscribe and follow wherever you find your podcasts. Today, we're joined by Marie Chevrier-Schwartz, a seasoned entrepreneur and the former founder and CEO of Sampler, a leader in retail tech, working with companies like L'Oreal and Kroger to digitize their product sampling strategies. Sampler has helped over 4.5 million consumers connect with personalized product experiences right from the comfort of their own home. The company was active for over 10 years before eventually closing down in 2024.
Currently, Marie is the CEO in residence at TechTO, managing a community of 60,000 builders across Canada. She has extensive experience in scaling and managing startups and is passionate about mentoring emerging entrepreneurs. Marie joined us at Canadian Business Evolution for a candid conversation with Fatima and I to talk about her entrepreneurial journey, as well as what she learned after the closure of her company, Sampler.
First, let's give it up for Marie. So I also want to provide some context, which is in 2018 when I was thinking about launching Quill, there was very few female founders that had gone out and successfully raised capital. And Marie was someone that I looked up to because for me, she was, again, like one of the few data points of women who had successfully gone out, brought in VC capital, and scaled a company. They were the darling of the Startup Toronto community, and she was lovely. And I want to start off today's conversation reading a social post that in June, Marie went on LinkedIn and posted. And I remember feeling really jolted when I read this on my screen because founder to founder, I could understand and empathize how difficult it could be to scale successfully a company for 10 years and then in front of your eyes, watch it go under. And so I reached out to Marie and I said, I know that it's very early and it's probably too fresh to talk about this, but I think it's important that we have this conversation because we never ever talk to the companies or highlight the stories of folks who have to close shop, which is the reality for almost 99% of scale-ups and startups in the world. And nobody wants to talk about the bad and the ugly. And so I reached out to Marie the same day, shamelessly, didn't even wait for the body to get cold. The same day that she posted on LinkedIn, she responded almost immediately saying, yes, I will have this conversation with you. And yes, I will do it in this platform at this venue with Jason and I. So I want to say thank you so much for agreeing to have this conversation. I know it's never easy to have to relive those moments. And we will talk about what Sampler did and the evolution and how it started. But I'm going to start off by reading a caption of the post that you put out on LinkedIn. 2 months ago, you ripped off your social media Band-Aid. We filed for bankruptcy protection for Sampler in June. I didn't realize it was possible to be this sad and this thankful at the same time. If you know me, you know how much I love this business and this team. October would have been 11 years of incredible highs and lows, including a pandemic and a financial downturn. The last several months were the hardest fight, and I can confidently say we did everything we could. So let's talk about that. Why was that the hardest point of like you having to accept the reality of having to rip off your social media bandage, and why was that so hard?
So I posted that
2 months after having actually filed for bankruptcy. And I had 2 months to be alone and reflective about my journey. And the night before I posted that, an article went out on BetaKit. And
of course, Doug was in there.
And I was asked that day, actually, if I would provide comment. And I knew that the story wouldn't be the raw Marie that I'd always been. And for the 2 months I had reflected on the fact that when I was going through this, I had no example of what it meant to fail, that there was no one out there talking about failure. And I remembered, and it's funny you mentioned that, I remembered how I had no example of being a woman in tech 10 years ago when I was starting. And I just felt a huge sense of responsibility for just being real about it. I thought that in order to be real about it, I had to own my own story and put my own words in my mouth and not let anybody, you know, edit it. What I wanted to do is just say, like, I failed. I failed really loud and just be honest about it, because one of the biggest waste of talent we can have is all the months that entrepreneurs who fail and are afraid of saying it, like that, if we as a entrepreneurial community can just master the rebound, like just like do it really well, allow people to say like, I failed and this is how I'm going to take those lessons into the next business, we will be faster at going back to the second. And I am very confident that on the second, we will be better than on the first, right? So in a way, it was just like a huge sense of responsibility that I felt. And also selfishly, I did not want to tell the story 100 times. I wanted to tell it once. I wanted to say it,
here we
know.
Are.
Oh, I said it in a short form there, and then I'm going to say it in a long form here today in a conversation.
Before the failure, I'd love to talk about just the ramp up when you were building Sampler, because like one of the first partnerships that I developed when I started at SJC was with Sampler. And when I developed that partnership, I was like a genius at work. It was like, oh my God, Jay is unstoppable. The innovation, I was blowing everyone away because it was a really cool business. So to go from 0 to 4.5 million, which is incredible, and all those great partnerships, like, what was that journey like when you were going on it? And what were those touch points or those moments where you were like, oh, this is actually happening for me?
Yeah. So Sampler, my first aha moment for Sampler, I was a brand ambassador giving out free product samples in grocery stores. Costco samples on Sundays, anyone? Yeah. Okay. So I was giving out the samples and I realized we have no idea who's trying that product and whether or not they had a positive experience with that product. And so I immediately thought, you know what, like this needs to be data driven. Fast forward several years, and I really do think, like, I'm a huge believer that life takes you places, but I ended up, because of like a series of circumstances, like a LinkedIn message, meeting a person, blah, 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 moved to Toronto, moved to New York. I end up working on a business called Glossy Box, which is a copy of Birchbox in New York City. And I'm sitting in the era of the subscription box, like when subscription boxes were booming. And it was there that I learned about technology and entrepreneurship and all of that. And that aha moment from back in university combined with that subscription box moment, I just needed to start Sampler. Now, I had no idea what starting a business meant. I remember like Googling, how do you incorporate a business, or entrepreneurship, how do you do it? Like just the simple basic stuff. But what I knew was that there was interest around product samples. And I initially back then reached out to mom like Facebook groups back then when like pre-influencers. And I was like, hey, want free stuff? And I would send them to a Google form where they can enter information. And I had convinced CPG brands to just give me like samples. Now, the funny thing about this Google form is like there was no limit at the time. So I would just need to look at the Google form until like it got to 10,000 and then shut it off, kill all the links as fast as possible so that the registrations would stop. So at that moment, the first time I did this and they crashed my Google form, I was like, I'm on to something. From there, I guess like another big moment was when I started getting a lot of brands willing to pay for it. So I had figured out that like if you give people free stuff, they will register. Sampler had 4.5 million users. We had 4.5 billion first party data points. People were telling us everything, hair types, like everything. And we partnered with different publications like this one, and people would just loved sharing. So we had to get the brands to pay. So that was a big like thing. And then we got investors to believe in us. So that was another, you know, another big thing.
That was Stand Up Ventures, right?
Or yeah. So our first initial investor was Michelle McBain.
Yeah.
And at the time she was at Mars. IAF, the Investment Accelerator Fund. And then she invested through her fund, Stand Up Ventures, once it opened. So she followed on. So she was a huge advocate. BDC was being a big investor, amazing, amazing partners to me throughout. So, yeah, so I think those were a few inflection points.
Wow. And it sounds like there's like a ton of momentum there. I'm telling my team right now, I want a Google Sheet with 10,000 things happening to it.
You are notoriously known for often saying as well, I remember back in the day when I first met you, I think I was at 88 in 2018, and we were in a meeting. I can't even remember what this meeting was for, but you mentioned it was a bad week, and you were like, every setback is an opportunity to come back stronger. And I think the exact word you said was, every setback is a setup for a better comeback.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, like, if you sort of applied that logical reasoning or emotional reasoning while you were winding down Sampler, and I'm curious, what was the biggest key learning or lesson that sort of helped push you through?
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I can take away from the journey of Sampler is that I truly did everything I possibly could. And I think, like, the advice I give to people that are like, is it the right time to stop this project? Or I tell them, like, you will know. What I knew is that I would only have peace of mind if I opened up every single door, if I did everything I possibly could. For context, when I started realizing that Sampler was unfortunately heading down like a really difficult situation, one that might not be repairable, what happened, one of the big, I mean, multitudes of things happened, but the largest driver was that we ultimately shipped product samples to consumers' homes. They would claim them online and we would ship them. Well, the pandemic was an incredible time for us. You can imagine people couldn't go in store to sample, so brands were ultimately investing in this channel like you couldn't believe. And then when the pandemic ended, we all got hit by the supply chain crisis. And so the supply chain crisis drove our unit economics down the drain. Like 9 years into the business, we completely lost product market fit because the shipping costs increased 200%. So we had to go and ultimately pivot the business away from shipping on the shortest timeline you could ever imagine, because funding, and that's another trend that, you know, you probably are following, but funding for technology companies is really dried up. Mm-hmm. So we had very short runway. We had an infrastructure that was really difficult to sustain. When I started realizing that it was going down there, I was 6 months pregnant. I was 6 months pregnant after having two miscarriages before that. I was undergoing a level of stress that was unfathomable. Every day I was worried about the little human that was growing in my belly, and I was thinking about, you know, how do I keep this company and all these amazing employees and partners and suppliers. And I'll be honest, I just kept pushing. And then my baby was born. And I was breastfeeding on a Zoom call while
I am stressed. Like, I'm like sweating listening to this right now.
It was like crazy. Like, I did everything. I took every part of my soul and I poured it into it. So when it was finally time and I realized there was no more option, I was like, I'm good.
It's almost like you were ready. You were like, I was like, I'm ready. It's time.
It's time. Like, I deserve to give up.
I almost want to give you a hug.
Please.
Like, founder to founder, guys, like, it is really stressful listening to this because, like, you, your business also becomes your baby and you're so attached to it, your identity is so attached to it. So firstly, I can't even imagine having such a high for so many years like Sampler, where you're like on this success trajectory and you've probably thought about the finish line so many times. And at no point did you imagine that this would be the finish line. But then doing that whilst pregnant after miscarriages, like, it's a lot.
I mean, so even hearing that, those are some serious ups and downs. So my question is, there are people here tonight who are probably at the very beginning of their entrepreneurial journey.
Sorry.
So my question is, how do you help someone understand what it is they're going to be
going through? Well, I want to make something super clear. I would not change a single moment of that 10 years. If you're currently thinking about building something, or if you're building something right now, you have the largest gift that life could give you. You have a passion. You have something that drives you every single day, something that gets you up, something that is going to make the world a better place, and most importantly, something that's going to grow you in a way that's unfathomable. There is no other career path that will grow you faster than this. So I would do it every single day, and I wouldn't change anything. And mark my words, this will not be my last business. So...
So just changing gears a little bit, I did some research. I went down a social media rabbit hole and I found something that I remember actually when you posted it, reading and reflecting, because it was almost like it was a bit of a trend shift in the tech community. And I almost feel like you were one of the most vocal entrepreneurs around this trend shift. So I'm going to read one more receipt that I gathered from the depths of the internet. For 6 years, I've been working hard building Sampler, often acting as the face of our company, always on, always smiling, and wherever our company needs me to be, I go. So much so that my family and friends often said to me, "Where are you this week? How long are you here for this time?" It's almost like there was a shift from Marie, the founder of Sampler, always hustling, always on, to one day waking up and realizing that you needed balance and that you needed to be more present and that you started to value things on top of Sampler and being the CEO. And so tell me about that, because I think it's so important. The Gary Vee hustle, 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 life is a race. You know, if you don't get that opportunity, somebody else will. I feel like now founders are starting to really preach the importance of balance and being present, and to be successful is to be well-rounded. And it was almost like you were an early adopter of that trend. So what led you to that realization?
One of the most important traits of an entrepreneur is them being happy. Like, it's really important that we invest in our happiness, and a happy leader is a better leader. I will stand by that. So I think investing in the other things I love, which, you know, you'll know for me, is my family for me, like two small children and my husband. It just made me a better leader. And so, I now give myself permission to say no. I've set boundaries, and I think we need to give ourselves permission.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't agree more. I think that for me, one of the biggest lessons that I've learned over the last few years at Quill and Co-host is that you can actually have a successful company and still have a life outside of your job. And One, retention-wise, it's key, but also it actually helps you to be a better CEO.
We have to lead by example. I remember, like, in the early days of a startup, you know, you do end up hiring a lot of people that look like you, that are in the same stage of life, like, especially when you start, if you start at a young age like I did. Like, I ended up hiring my friends or the friends of the friends. And we, like, and, you know, they were all early in their career. And it was the time where I started hiring, you know, family people and realizing, like, if I don't showcase balance to my team, they will think that that's something we don't foster here, and I will not attract great talent, or I will not, I will create, you know, a false picture. You have to also emulate that for your team.
So, like, that takes me to another thing that you love, Tech.to.
Yes.
So tell us about this next phase for you leading Tech.to.
So in the same post where I ripped the social media Band-Aid, I share the reflection that I had, which was that I really wanted to spend a year-ish, focused on giving back to the community and focused on reconnecting with the community and doing fun stuff like this. So I just said, like, if anyone is working on something really cool, please reach out. And funny enough, Tech.to was an organization that I was already a part of. I was actually a community lead for the retail side of Tech.to. So I was hosting events once a quarter for Tech.to. And Jason and Alex, the founders, are incredible. They're builders. And 10 years ago, they built a community of builders for builders, all in tech. And they said, Marie, we actually have been on the lookout for a CEO for quite some
time.
They
pounced as well, like I did.
They just jumped at it. So they're like, we'd love you to be the CEO. And I, like, my first reaction was like, CEO, no way. Like, I was thinking, like, volunteering, like, I don't know, like, mentoring startups for lunch and learn or something. But then I started thinking about it, and I was like, wow, this is, like, exactly what I want to be doing. Like, I want to impact as many people as possible and to bring programming that can really bring entrepreneurship forward. And yeah, CEO in residence is what we decided. It's not like so committal, right?
You know, obviously you've learned a ton. You've learned a ton. So I'd love for you to distill some of those learnings. Can you tell us three things that you can tell emerging entrepreneurs now, three things to just give them the energy, help them keep going, help them get to the next great moment in their journeys?
So for those of you who are thinking of getting started, number one is just get started. There will be no sign from God. There will be no, like, red carpet. There will be nothing except you taking that first step. And that step might be as little as, today I'm going to Google if there is another business like this in the market, or I'm going to consider, like, the steps of incorporation. Like, it does not need to be a massive thing. Just get started and keep holding yourself accountable every day to taking that next step. I was not technical. I was not a technologist in any way. I just had an insight and the willingness to pursue it for 10 years. The second thing I will say is, you are not your company. I am the prime example that it is completely possible to tie your entire identity into something and then to ultimately have it go, and then for you to find something else that you can tie your identity to. I will tell you a third secret. The third secret is, please don't talk to me about product sampling. I can't freaking talk about it. Okay. You will hate the problem when I've been given opportunities to consult on the matter. I spent 2 months just giving to all of my competitors and peers in the space, like every knowledge I had. And then I said, stop calling me, please.
So we're going to end today's podcast episode doing a quick rapid fire round with Marie, because we want to get to know Marie behind the sampler. So who is Marie? So you know the drill. I'm going to ask you quick questions and you're going to give me quick responses. You can't think about it, and short and snippy.
Okay.
Okay. What's one thing people don't know about you?
I'm originally French. I didn't know how to speak English until high school.
Oh, yeah. Wow. What's a motto or mantra that you live by?
Que sera, sera. It's also my favorite song to sing to my daughter right now.
Biggest pet peeve.
Okay, I really hate when people leave the backgrounds, like when, you know, like you put a logo and then at the background, like the background stays on and then they put it on like another background, like drives me freaking nuts.
That is so specific.
Sorry.
It's like you really thought about it. What's the most adventurous thing you've ever done?
Moving to New York, like with a few days notice for a job. Yeah.
What's one thing you wish you knew when you were 19?
Oh, I wish I knew how strong my intuition is. And I've been like, that's one thing in the silent 2 months that I did. I just sat with my intuition and like, holy moly, that's like such an amazing superpower.
And then my last question is, describe living in Canada in 3 words.
I would say community. Like I really do love how, I'm so glad I started my business in Toronto specifically. And I think community is a big one. I think, oh, that's so hard. Cultural, I love how we get to learn about so many amazing cultures.
And look how well represented this room is. So
yeah,
cultural is definitely appropriate.
Yeah, and I think like underestimated. Like I hate to say it, but like I feel like there's been a lot of talk lately about like Canadian ambition.
Well, thank you so much for doing this, Marie. I honestly am so grateful to you. Jason and I are so thankful that you like agreed to share your story on this specific platform. And we're so excited to see you build again. I know it's coming. It's around the corner. We'll be watching and cheering you on. But thank you for being so authentic today with your story as well.
Thanks.
I'm going to give you a hug. There are two key moments that really stand out in my mind when it comes to Marie's career. The first is when she first had the idea to launch Sampler. She was a brand ambassador in college, and she really took the time to build upon her skills. And it was a long journey before she was eventually ready to launch Sampler. The second unique moment is when she decided it was time to shut down the company. The company had experienced compounded growth through the pandemic, but then was eventually crushed by the global supply chain crisis. Marie felt like she had done everything in her power to keep the company going, and she felt a great sense of peace and almost relief when it was time to step away.
So both you and Marie talked about maintaining balance and how maintaining balance made you, like at the beginning of starting your business, and made you a better leader, a better CEO. So can you elaborate on why you think that's the case, and also what tactics you have to maintain balance?
It's so interesting because I feel like in the early part of my career, I was like the Gary Vee mentality. Life is a race. Life is a hustle. If you don't move at lightning speed, somebody else will beat you to it. And of course, you know, the classic burnout. I will say now over time, I have become so ruthless about where I prioritize my time. So like first, let's start there. I know what my objectives are, and if it's not contributing to my company's bottom line, or if it's not contributing to like my personal relationships or balance, then I'm just not going to spend my time there. So being really particular about where I spend my time means I say no to a lot of people and a lot of opportunities constantly. So that's the first thing I would say, exercising boundaries is key. And then I would say I'm also pretty militant about stopping work at 5 p.m. every day. So I start at 7. I stop at 5 because that's generally when my productivity tanks. And that allows me to do my best work from 7 to 5. I don't work evenings, I don't work weekends, and I don't work vacation, and I take a lot of vacation. So all of those things I think sets a culture within the company that to be successful is to be well-rounded. It's not about how many hours you're clocking in every day. And if as a CEO, I can be done at 5, there's no reason why the rest of you can't get your work done in those hours. And I think that has helped me be a more measured, balanced, and well-rested CEO.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference.
So in the rapid fire section of our conversation with Marie, she shared how she has a deep affinity and respect for the Canadian entrepreneurship community. It's a community that she works very closely with, but also a community you work really closely with. And she talked about how she feels like Canadian entrepreneurs are incredibly underrated and almost underappreciated. And so I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. And if somebody did say to you, Canadian entrepreneurs are underrated, what would you say to them?
Well, I mean, it ends up being this double-edged sword because sometimes when I encounter Canadian entrepreneurs, there's always this whole idea of like, Canada's really small. It's
yes,
a really small market.
30 million.
30 million, super small market. And even with the clients that I work with, when they're a global company, it's like sometimes Canada will just be lumped in with a city. Like, oh, I manage Canada and Boston. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess. But one of the things is like, it's competitive in Canada. It's hard. There's lots of things that are really difficult to do here. So all of the entrepreneurs that I've been encountering as the publisher of Canadian Business, really incredibly inspiring, lots of grit, super innovative. And I'm actually blown away when I see entrepreneurs who are just like, they're in Canada and then they find success south of the border. They find global success. So obviously there's some great ingredients for entrepreneurship in Canada. And hopefully we'll be able to see more entrepreneurs have success here and also abroad.
Thank you for listening to The Moment. We strive to bring you something different each week because we don't need another podcast with a bunch of finance bros sitting around their microphones talking about dropshipping. Just like the founders we interview each week, we're here for the real talk. Want more? There's an easy way to make sure you don't miss a new episode drop. Subscribe and follow wherever you find your podcasts.
But don't stop listening yet, please. Rate their podcast, review the podcast. We'd love to get the word out. So please let us know what you think. And don't forget to share this episode so that we can learn more from these incredible entrepreneurs and their stories from the moment everything changed.